The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Last week, I gave a talk on one aspect of the Buddha as a teacher. And specifically, I talked about how what it said in the ancient texts about how the Buddha would give a Dharma talk to lay people, people who are not his monastics. And I'd like to follow that talk with another talk about the Buddha as a teacher. And hopefully it's interesting for you. The issue of teaching is a very important one in Buddhism because to a big degree, Buddhism is not only is a practice tradition where practice and meditation or practice is a very important part of it, but it's also a teaching tradition. And where it's the teaching of the Dharma, the teaching of the practice, which is responsible for conveying it down through the ages, down to us. And it's always been historically very important, the idea of teaching. So I want to talk a little bit about that. And since we're all kind of participating in teaching events when we come here in IMC, perhaps stepping back these couple of talks and just kind of looking at teaching itself, maybe we'll have some interest for you. One of the things I'd like to talk about today is the motivation to teach. What would motivate someone to teach? Of course, you can come up with many ideas. If we go back to the time of the Buddha, there is an ancient text that talks about supposedly in first person, where he talks about his own quest for awakening and his decision to teach after his awakening. In experiencing his awakening, one of the first kind of reflections that he had was that this was really profound, what he'd come to realize. And it was so profound that it was difficult to teach. And so in thinking that it was difficult to teach, this occurred to him. Enough with teaching the Dhamma that even I found hard to reach, for it will never be perceived by those who live in lust and hate. Those wrapped in darkness will never discern the deep Dharma, which goes against the worldly stream, subtle, deep, and difficult to see. So it's kind of quite remarkable that on his awakening, the Buddha reflected somehow about teaching. And the way he reflected about it was not, let's go teach, but let's not. It's going to... So considering thus, my mind inclined to inaction rather than to teaching the Dharma. So that's, there was this risk at some point of the Buddhism never coming into existence because the Buddha was disinclined to teach at the inception of his kind of beginning of after his awakening. And so why is that? Why would someone be reluctant to teach? He gives an answer, and the answer is that it's difficult to understand. It was even difficult for him to understand the Dharma. And also people's minds are infused with lust and hate that makes it impossible or very difficult for them to see what he experienced, the freedom that he experienced. And maybe that's understandable. Someone who's attained some degree of peace and well-being and doesn't want to exhaust themselves teaching, if teaching is not going to have any effect, they're not going to reach anybody. But then, as the story is told in this ancient text, Brahma, who was one of the great gods in the Indian pantheon of gods, picked this up and decided, this is not so good. And so he came down to the Buddha, and he said to the Buddha, "Venerable Sir, please teach the Dhamma. There are beings with little dust in their eyes who are wasting through not hearing the Dharma. There will be those who will understand the Dharma. So here he says, there are some people who have the ability to see. They have just a little bit of dust. They're not kind of they're not deeply lost in the worlds of greed, hate, lust, but they have just a little bit. And if you teach them, you can make a difference for them. And so then the Buddha listened to Brahma's pleading, and out of compassion for beings, I surveyed the world with the eye of a Buddha. And I saw indeed, it says, that there are beings, people, with just a little bit of dust in their eyes. And so then he decided to teach. And so then I replied to Brahma, open for them are the doors of the deathless. Let those with eyes now show their faith. Thinking it would be troublesome, O Brahma, I did not speak the Dharma subtle and sublime. And then Brahma thought, I have created the opportunity for the Buddha to teach the Dharma. And after paying homage to the Buddha, he departed. He did what he had to do. He didn't stay to get the teachings. he ensured that the teachings passed on. So, you know, what to make of the story? And it's a bit of I take it as a myth, the story of Brahma. And what do we make of this myth? And it's what it says, that somehow after his awakening, the Buddha just thought it wasn't possible. He wasn't going to be effective as a teacher. And it was just troublesome to do so, to try to teach. Another way that this story has been interpreted is that it's unbecoming for someone to want to teach without being invited first. And I don't know if that's the right interpretation for this, but this is the way that I was raised in Buddhism, in the Zen tradition at least. I'm not saying this is necessarily wise, but it was the way that I was raised in Buddhism, is that you're not supposed to want to teach on your own. You're supposed to wait, or at least you're not supposed to operate on the motivation to teach. You're supposed to wait until you get invited to teach. And I was told back in the Zen Center times that there are two ways in which the request to teach comes. It comes from your teacher, who knows you well enough to know that you're now ready to start teaching. But that's not enough to become a teacher. It also, there has to be an invitation from a community of people who want you to teach. Because there are people who the teacher thinks they should teach, but there's no one who wants to listen to them. And then there's people that the people want to listen to, they have some charisma or something, but the teachers don't think they're ready. And so it has to be kind of a both in order for it really to work. But the invitation is there. And so in Zen, where they have a kind of ritual that's most people don't understand, know about, perhaps behind the scene. The idea being that if you don't teach the Dharma unless you've been requested three times. And the first time someone asks, you kind of go, I don't know what you're supposed to do, but just to wait until three times to know they're really serious. And only then do you really start to teach. So this reluctance to teach has often been, in some circles of Buddhism, especially some of the ones that I was familiar with, has been part of the culture, part of the lore, is to be hesitant. Wait until you're invited. Wait until you're ready. And you probably don't know when you're ready, so wait until you get invited, and that's when it comes. So in this story of the Brahma coming, Brahma provides the Buddha with the invitation, so that he's not making it up on his own. So the proper decorum, the proper approach, is being demonstrated. Another interpretation people give for the story is that by having Brahma, who's like the great god in the pantheon, come and ask the Buddha to teach and pay respects, and Buddha must have been pretty hot, you know, if the great god comes and pays his respect. So then the Buddha decided to teach, and he looked around, and he remembered he had five companions who had left him, somewhat in, kind of rejected him, because for many years the Buddha had been an ascetic, and then he'd given up his ascetic practices, and his ascetic companions thought that now he was getting soft, and so they left him. But the Buddha remembered his companion and said, they have just little dust in their eyes, and I'll go find them and teach them. And it's on his way to his long walk across India to go find his companions, he came across a renunciant, an ascetic renunciant of a different order, different tradition. And Ajivaka. And Ajivaka saw the Buddha and said to the Buddha, friend, your faculties are clear, the color of your skin is pure and bright. Under whom have you gone forth, friend? Who is your teacher? Whose dharma do you profess? So here, something about the quality of the Buddha's personhood. You know, he was shiny, radiant. You can imagine after coming out of being awakened. He was pretty happy, peaceful. And so this guy asks him, what's your dharma? Who's your teacher? So this is the reply, that's at least this text gives. I am one who has transcended all, a knower of all, unsullied among all things, renouncing all. By craving, seizing, freed, having known this all for myself, to whom should I point to as a teacher? I have no teacher, and one like me exists nowhere in all the world, with all its gods, because I have no person for my counterpart. I am the accomplished one in the world. I am the supreme teacher. I alone am a fully enlightened one whose fires are quenched and extinguished. I go now to the city of Kasi to set in motion the wheel of the Dharma. In a world that has become blind, I go to beat the drum of the deathless. That's pretty. So what's interesting is what happened next. Ajivaka simply said, may this be so, friend, and shaking his head, took a bypass and departed. I love this story. So one of the things is the Buddha's first attempt, I don't know if he was trying to teach, but he's answering this question, presenting himself as a teacher, he kind of failed. It didn't work. The guy said, maybe so, and left him alone. So I think of this as kind of like a little bit of a wake-up call. Maybe he had to take a different approach. So when he finally found his companions, he taught them the Four Noble Truths, as opposed to go and claim that he was, you know, the all-conquering great victor and all these things. So we don't know whether this is really, you know, this kind of text with the mythology and all that, you know, does it really date back to the time of the Buddha, or is this part of the hagiography, kind of the ways in which the founder of religion is kind of elevated over the centuries. What's interesting for this purpose today is that what it says about teaching, that the Buddha's reticence to teach, having someone invite him to teach, and then setting off to teach, and then maybe not being so effective at the first attempt. And, you know, I don't know what to make of it all, except it feels very, in some ways, very human to me. There's a strong tendency to maybe over-idealize the Buddha, and make him almost like some perfect being who can't make any mistakes. But here it seems very kind of human. It's reluctance to teach, being invited to teach, looking around, trying, not succeeding so well, and then going off and trying some more with his companions. So about this motivation to teach, there's an expression in this text. After the Brahma asks the Buddha to teach, it says, out of compassion for beings, I surveyed the world. So out of compassion, he then looked around. The idea that you would teach out of compassion is really a central one in this tradition. That compassion is the primary motivation that's referred to over and over again, is the reason to, the primary motivation to teach. It's not to get rich, it's not to get status, it's not to make a lot of friends, it's not to impress your family and friends. It's not just to be able to talk philosophy or something. But out of compassion means that being sensitive to the suffering that exists in the world, that out of care and concern for that suffering, that and care for other people, that the person decides to go out and try to make a difference to the world. So the idea of being motivated by compassion is central. There is a list of things that the Buddha said, five qualities that should be established in a person who's going to be teaching. So the passage goes like this. It is not easy to teach the Dharma to others, says the Buddha. So that's, it's not easy. The Dharma should be taught to others only when five qualities are established within the person teaching. Which five? The Dharma should be thought, should be taught with a thought, I will give a discourse step by step. I will give a well-arranged discourse. I will speak out of compassion. I will not speak for material reward. I will speak without harming myself or others. So this is an interesting list. So first of all, it mentions being motivated by compassion as being important, and then not speaking for material reward. And this was something that also I felt like when in my kind of growing up in Buddhism and Zen, that was really deeply kind of inculcated, is that the right word, or taught to me. The people who taught there, when it was time for you to start teaching there, it was clearly set up the system that you would not receive any kind of material reward for that teaching. You would just teach. And if people wanted to listen, they'd listen. If they didn't, they didn't. And one of the nice things about Zen Center was that the teaching there is kind of, it was kind of like, think of it as a little as a monastery, so all these people are living together a little bit. And when it was your turn to teach, you'd be invited to teach, and you teach, and then you go back and you continue with your practice and with your job that you had, whatever you're doing. And there was something about very freeing for me in that environment where it was very matter of fact. There wasn't a lot at stake. It wasn't like your status, you know, or your job or things were at risk. It's just a matter of fact thing. When you were invited, you go and teach, and there was, you know, and you didn't give much thought about that you were going to get anything in return. And when it was over, you just went back to your regular job at Zen Center, whatever you happened to be doing. But this idea of not receiving material reward is, I think, an important one in our tradition of Buddhism. And this is one of the reasons why, in our tradition, we don't charge for the Dharma. We offer it freely. And we believe that it's one of the best ways to hear the Dharma, learn the Dharma, practice the Dharma, is in a field of generosity and freely givenness. But it's also, we don't say very often, it's also considered that it's best for the Dharma teacher to give in that spirit and to try to give without expectation of material reward. Now, like for example, in our scene, like here at IMC, the people who do teach here often receive dana, people's donations. And that's part of the reason why we can be here, because people are supported this way. But with this kind of instruction, then part of how I understand that is that anybody who's teaching has to be practicing this instruction, practicing with the instructions, not for material reward, which means you have to watch your mind. I have to watch my mind and be careful that not to certainly notice and then not buy into any kind of thoughts about, let me see if I can teach really well today so that I can get a lot of money in that dana box. I'm certainly, teaching about the teaching is boring for people, and I should think of something exciting and, talk about something that's... And some people actually feel, I don't know how true it is, but feel that some Dharma teachers in the West choose the topics that they talk about based on things that they think will be popular. Anyway, so for me, and I think what I hope for our tradition is that this kind of teaching, not to teach for material rewards, means that we have to be very careful. Teachers have to be careful to look at their own minds and motivations and to be able to root out when the motivation becomes for material reward or for status or for other kinds of things that are not just simply out of compassion. And the hope is to be always come at the teaching out of compassion, out of concern for someone else, and not for concern for oneself, exactly, in a certain way. So I've mentioned four of them now. So first, step by step. So one gives a discourse step by step. And the second one is well-arranged discourse. So a well-reasoned discourse, sometimes it's translated as. Step by step means that you it's developmental, it's gradual. It's like we talked about last week, the Buddha started with talking about virtue, or generosity, and then virtue, and then the heavens, and then overcoming the hindrances. And so you kind of build over time what, you know, it's also understanding in Buddhism that the Dharma is very deep. And you can't necessarily expect people to understand the full depth of it by just telling them so. And so you have to prepare people and set the stage or the context for understanding what's being taught. So the first is a step-by-step teaching. The second is to teach in a way that's well-arranged, well-reasoned, well-thought-out. The third is to speak out of compassion. The fourth is not to speak for material reward. Now the fifth one is one that I want to get some emphasis on. I will speak without harming myself or others. I will speak without harming myself or others. So you want to speak out of compassion, but at the same time you don't want to have compassion fatigue. At the same time you don't want to stretch yourself so thin teaching that it harms yourself. And there's many ways in which a person can get harmed by teaching too much or teaching in certain kinds of ways. And so the responsibility of a Dharma teacher is to teach in such a way that no one gets harmed, both oneself and others. And this is a key aspect of the early Buddhist tradition, this idea of living a life that is benefits both self and others. The definition of a wise person that the Buddha gave is a person is wise if they benefit others and they benefit themselves. And also says they benefit self and others. So the idea of, is not just about benefiting oneself, that would be selfish. It's not just about benefiting others, then you might harm yourself and exhaust yourself. And sometimes you hear in people this kind of emphasis on, or the importance of being altruistic. And so there are I know Dharma students who have teachers who have exhausted themselves because they think they're supposed to only be altruistic, only kind of give themselves up, let go, abandon their self-concern, because they're supposed to just be helping people. And wherever there, people need to be helped. And the issue with that is it isn't just a couple of people here and there need help. there's no end to helping people. There's just, you know, once you start looking around, there's, the need that we have in our society for supporting each other is phenomenal. And so once you start picking that up, and feel responsible for all of it, then it's exhausting. So let alone society at large. I saw this at some of the Buddhist communities that I've been part of, was the Buddhist communities have unending needs. And so the people have this kind of overemphasis on altruism. Will say, well, I just have to give myself up. I just have to kind of give myself over to take care of those needs. And I've seen people burn and crash. So this is where you're teaching in a way that harms oneself. So the idea is not to harm oneself when one teaches, but also not to harm some other people. And that's a hard one, not to harm others. It's as a teacher myself, I don't think I have motivations to harm anyone. But when you teach a large group of people, it's very hard to know what to say in such a way that someone doesn't pick it up in a way that they feel hurt by it, or feel like that didn't work for me, or feel left out, or feel I can't do that and therefore I'm not really good enough or something. And how to teach in such a way that everyone finds themselves in the teaching and finds it useful and beneficial without feeling discouraged or without feeling somehow judged or something. It's something I consider a lot, and the fact that some of you keep coming back means that probably it works for you. But there are people who don't come back, and people who maybe come once or come a few times, and I say something, maybe they feel it didn't connect to them or didn't work for them, or they felt left out or something from the talk. So it's something I think about, and I certainly welcome feedback. And actually, I'm actually very, very eager to hear from people if what I say doesn't work, or if I've hurt someone or offended someone, or because I'd like to learn from that and change. So the idea of teaching out of compassion without harming oneself and others. There's a in the long discourses of the Buddha, there's a lot of discussion in the early Buddhist texts about teaching, because it's such an important part of how this whole thing gets, conveyed, and such an important part of what the Buddha did was as a teacher. So there's actually a lot of discussion about teaching, teachers, nature of teaching, and stuff like that. And there was a man named Lohika who was going to challenge the Buddha. And he had this challenge to him. He said, if a person has become liberated and they want to teach, then they're just binding themselves again. They're kind of like tying themselves up, getting knotted up again. They're losing their freedom. Because teaching, the desire to teach, the motivation to teach, is a desire, and the desire kind of keeps you attached. And so if you're really free and liberated, you have no attachments, you'll have no desire to teach. So he came to the Buddha and challenged him in that way. And so the Buddha then countered that with a series of questions for him. And I'll give you one of the questions that or one of the statements. If anyone were to say, King Pasanadi, who reigns over this country, that he alone should consume the fruits and revenues of the country and not share them with others, he, speaking in this way, would be a creator of obstacles for the king and for the king's subjects, you and others. Being a creator of obstacles, he would not be sympathetic for their welfare. In one not sympathetic for their welfare, the mind would be established in animosity for them. When the mind is established in animosity, there is wrong view. So here, you only got a snippet of it, but a king in the ancient world, if he takes all the revenue and all the fruit from the countryside and just keeps it for himself, people would starve. The part of the job of the king is to ensure that everyone gets an adequate amount of the fruits of the land and the wealth, and part of the redistribution of wealth is part of the role in the ancient world of the king. And so when the Buddha asked this Lohika, what if the king decided not to share anything? Would that work? And Lohika said, no, it wouldn't. And what's interesting in this passage, the Buddha goes on to say, not only that, but not sharing, not sharing is a kind of, for the king, it would be a kind of animosity. So I think that's, I don't know if that's true, but I thought it was a very interesting statement. That just simply holding everything to yourself is kind of, there's some kind of animosity there. In the same way, the passage goes on, if anyone were to say, suppose that a religious practitioner were to arrive at a skillful doctrine, having arrived at a skillful doctrine, that he or she should not declare it to anyone else, For what can one person do for another? It would be just the same as if having cut through an old bond, one were to make another new bond. I say that such a thought, such an idea, is an evil, greedy deed. Evil is maybe not the best translation of the Pali. For what can one person do for another? So a person who has a thought, you know, if having come to some teaching, some understanding that brings me peace, freed of attachments, if I were to teach, that just creates another attachment. If a person has that thought, that person would be a creator of obstacles for others, who, coming to the doctrine and discipline revealed by the Buddha, it's a little hard to read it all. It's kind of language, but so just in the way the king, if the king keeps everything for themselves, it creates obstacles or problems for the subjects. So when someone comes to a good, useful, helpful doctrine and practice, if they keep it to themselves, here it claims you create obstacles for other people. It's not simply that, you know, you're innocent because you don't do it. You know, you just sit in your enlightened retirement. But here there's some idea that actually by not teaching you create an obstacle, and by not teaching, there's some animosity in the person who's not teaching. Why does this tradition say this? You know, what's going on? So one way that I interpreted for myself or understand this, and often these ancient teachings of the Buddha need some kind of interpretation. They don't really stand by themselves. But the interpretation I have is that when a person is liberated or has some degree of liberation, it means that their attachments, the way in which their heart is closed or their heart is afraid or agitated or lost in itself, has dissipated. And the heart, in a sense, is open. And when the heart is open, when our empathy is available to be sensitive to what goes on in the world around us, it's a natural thing to want to step forward to support and help others. And it takes an act, an intentional act of holding back to not allow that natural thing to move forward. And so that's why they can say that there's animosity, in this passage, in the person who decides not to teach. Because in order not to teach, you have to hold yourself back. If you understand something that is useful for other people, because of this the idea of empathy, of compassion, the open heart. So the compassion that motivates teaching is not necessarily, it's not something you have to kind of invent or make yourself feel, but rather it's something that's a byproduct of doing the path of liberation, path of freedom. That as your empathy develops, as your resistance, as your closeness, as you become more open, that the natural response to the suffering, natural response to this world, is to step forward to try to make a difference. Here, the emphasis is about teaching. And I think as people who are practitioners, practicing this path, if the path, this path, this practice does its work on you, and each person's going to have to decide for themselves what the right way to step forward into the world is. And for some people, it's taking care of their family, what's close by, or taking care of their employees, or their colleagues at work. It doesn't have to be like you have to go off and be a teacher. Maybe it's being a better neighbor for the people nearby. But somehow, you know, given the cause and conditions of your life, given the circumstances of who you are, your personality and many things, as the heart becomes open and you feel a call or feel moved to respond to the world, what's the right response given your circumstance? And for the Buddha, he decided to be a teacher. And so that was useful for us, important for us, set something in motion. And he had a lot to say about teaching. And I hope that those of us who are teaching in under the name or support of the Buddha adequately follow these instructions about how to teach, especially the part about teaching out of compassion and teaching in such a way that we teach without harming ourselves or others, and that we teach without concern for material reward. I hope that was okay. If it was not, and you guys are sitting there thinking, what a lousy talk, then it becomes, you know, if that's an issue for me, then it becomes my practice to look at that, work with that. But I offered the best I could for what I had today.